A relatively healthy front of the season has turned into what all Division I college football teams try to stay away from, and that is fighting your way through injuries and trying to maintain the health of your team. Sullivan goes out, and we have to bring in a four-string quarterback. Higgins gets nicked up as well. Today, we discuss what injury protocol looks like inside a Division I football program. Hope you enjoy. Let's have a day. Let's go.
What's up, brother? I actually got this hat when the brand new room was done.
Because they did it all out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I should have been rogue.
Of course you'd say that. And it shouldn't be a weight room. It should be a box.
I don't necessarily love box, but...
Are we wearing the same hoodie today?
Yeah, I've got the same one on again.
There we go. Let's go.
See, in my office here, I just have sweatshirts or other relevant podcast t-shirts that we've done because I don't have to really get dressed for work. But then if I'm wearing something that's like, doesn't look good on like a clip that might be like, yeah. There's been several times where I'm wearing like a pink shirt and I'm talking about Iowa football. It's like, who is this guy? Like if someone comes across this, they're like, who's this slappy?
There you go.
Talking about Iowa football. So I try to keep that in a hat or two around. Oh, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's the bye week. I listened to your guys' the recap episode, and it was not talked about the fact that Brian Ferentz works at Maryland.
Well, that's because we haven't previewed Maryland yet.
Okay. I was just surprised that it didn't get brought up. Like, I was like, man, this is whoo.
Kind of forgotten about, too. When coaches go in, because I don't know what his title is over there, analyst or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know how they create those and like is there a limit to how many like analysts a team can have?
Probably not. I mean, the guy that I worked for at Towson is an analyst over there right now too, Rob Ambrose.
Because there's only 10 official position like assistant coaches on a staff. And that switched from 9 when I think like my senior year.
Yeah. And I forget who they added as that extra coach. Cause that's when LeVar went from doing, cause LeVar was like, he was outside linebacker. Then he went to, you know, tight end and special teams. And then it was just special teams only. And I forget, I don't know who they are.
I don't know who they brought on either. It would have been my senior year. I have no idea. Anyway, I think you can have like 100 analysts if you want.
Probably. Seriously. Like if you start looking at some of these universities that have a ton of money and it's like, oh yeah, they're just an analyst. Oh, they're just an analyst. Like, oh, okay.
Like when Wisconsin went with Fickell and Leonard, the D coordinator, who everybody at this point is like, wow, we should have hired him as the head coach. Like I think the next year, which would have been last year, I think he just went to Illinois and was like a defensive analyst.
Well, isn't that exactly what happened with the guy, Lester? He was just an analyst at the Packers and then got hired?
Yeah.
It's like a holding spot, like what we call the bullpen.
It's a loophole. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, Brian is coaching for – you forget because they're not like – you know, no one talks about them when Maryland does well. You know, like I doubt anybody in Maryland's fan base, half of Maryland's fan base don't even know that he's on the staff probably.
And they also have like, you know, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself because this Maryland matchup is a little personal to me too, I suppose. But like, they're going to have 4-star kids and 5-star kids, like not as many, but they're going to have, one of those starred lineups like of talent.
Yeah. It's not although I don't know with this team, it almost feels like the wonkiness of this season. It feels like now they go in there because they lost to UCLA. Backs against the wall, like you can't lose this game. You can't.
But you can't. That's the thing.
I know.
You can't, but like it is a possibility. Like
right.
We had the same thought in 14 when we went there and lost.
What a horrible game.
Exactly.
Did we have the same thought though? What was the context of that? It was the first time.
Oh, we're Iowa. They're a new Big Ten team. They're like da 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 da. I think we were ahead 14-0 and then blew it. Like the kid Diggs had like 3 touchdowns.
Oh yeah, we played Stephon Diggs, didn't we? We played so many savages when I was there. Like I still to this day, and the time is running out on it because I am getting older. But for a long time, it's been very cool since basically my first year in college, and we play OBJ and Jarvis Landry. Like since that moment, you look in the NFL every Sunday, and you're just like, yeah, I played against him, tackled him, played with him. Like it's been so cool. And in about 5 years, probably, there won't be a single person left, almost. Tristan will still be in the league for a while. AJ will be in the league.
Did you play with Nick Neiman? Yeah.
Yeah. A couple of those guys that were younger when I was on my way out. But, like, there won't be very many left. I'll just be, yeah, back in my day.
In the day when we were Iowa trained with my hoodie.
Yeah, I'm so trained, dude. Gonna train after this. Pretty excited about it. Thought about doing it before this, but I just didn't have it in me. We'll talk about the Maryland Brian stuff. Which is like, it is interesting to see what Lester's done with the offense. You know, some guys just aren't the fit or just the job or whatever it is. I mean, Lester's done a really good job with this offense. The reality is the numbers speak loudly versus what we've been doing the last 3 years. I do think that if Brian was still here, the numbers would have been the best of the last 4 years, just because we have a veteran offensive line. Like we would have been able to do stuff, but Lester's been good. I held today's topic out just because it was going to become relevant at some point, and that point is now. And that is, one, we could talk about the bye week. We talked about the bye week before, too. But this bye week is ever more important than it could have been because the team is finally caught up with injuries. And it really reared its head on Friday. Down to I don't know if he's a fourth or a fifth string, whatever number it is at this point. Didn't matter, really. We're playing a walk-on quarterback that got 2 weeks with legitimate time in our offense. So I want to approach today or the topic of injuries from the strength and conditioning perspective. First of all, injuries are, we were really lucky through the start of the season. KF in press conference said, like, I think it was week, it probably would have been around the time we played like Michigan State. He's like, yeah, we might be the healthiest we've ever been at this point in the season. And I'd love to hear your perspective on injuries just from a strength conditioning standpoint in general, because in the NFL, a strength conditioning coach's job, at least from the outside, from what I can tell, is basically just don't hurt the guys. Like, these guys are very developed. You're most likely not going, like, if they've made it to the league, there's not a lot of work to do to get them to the point where they're ready to play physically. They've proven that they can do that. And it seems like in the NFL, your job is just, hey, you know, run the guys through some movements, like maybe even become a more functional corrective program. No? Okay. So I'd love to hear.
Yeah. No.
That was my perception of what an NFL job would look like. And then a lot of the stuff that they do in the offseason with their, like, actually, you sent me a message about Jordan Lowe. I forgot to bring that up. Last week, my perception is that So my perception is that like the guy who's heading the program has like this easy job of like,
not even a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So let's dive into this.
You go.
First of all, my first question is, are they tracking it? Because this was the first metric that we used at Towson.
Tracking injuries.
Yes, they need to be tracking player availability. And so what I did at Towson is at the end of camp, you ask the head coach, who are your starting 11 on both sides of the ball? Who are key backups or who are your special personnels? So like realistically, you might have like 15 to 20 guys. You can include your kicker, your punter, your long snapper, and your punt return kick returner. So like you're going to have a key 40 guys on a roster that are the most important. And then you need to be tracking player availability week by week and then noting what was the reason that they couldn't play. Availability isn't your version. It needs to be the athletic trainers deeming them able to play or not. And it's not if the coaches say, oh, well, he didn't practice until Wednesday. No. Was he physically able to play? And then could you have found ways to get him in the game? That needs to be tracked and that needs to be recorded over time. That's metric number one. Metric number two needs to be time return from injury. So if somebody does get injured, how long does it take for them to come back from said injury? Then the third metric that strength coaches should matter is that speed, power, and agility and all of that, which is why day one at Towson, I ripped the record board down of like squat, bench, jumps, all of that, because that stuff, that's third. That doesn't matter. Number one is player availability. Number two is how long does it take you to return from injury if you do get injured? If you want to intervene right here, now it is before I go on the other stuff.
Yep. Yeah, because you're ready to rip and I love it. So that's a good point you make. Great distinction there, because it's not the, there is another staff here that matters, and that is the training staff. Yep. And arguably, in a way, more important because they have to be medically cleared. Right.
Yeah. And that's where you start really working well together. Like, and that's where I always talked about it at Towson. I said, listen, when I go, what's the difference between an athletic trainer and a strength coach? Because we need to have a unified voice. Kyle Cherry, yeah, the head football athletic trainer, and I, we were boys, like super, super close. Because I said, okay, when Kyle is returning an injured player, if we're in the offseason and I have the whole team, and if Kyle's doing return to play and he's dribbling a player, he's doing a regressed version of something, isn't he acting like a strength coach at the end of that player's rehab? I go, when I'm rehabbing somebody during practice because they're watching practice, am I an athletic trainer? The lines blur, and that's where there needs to be just complete synergy. And it's one voice coming from both the athletic trainer and the strength coach. It's not only coming from me. It's not only coming from the athletic trainer. We need to spend time together and learn each other's language, learn lingo. Like Kyle and I, in the winter of 2011, we spent like that entire January of just like, this is my progression. This is my regression. This is our terminology. This is how we're going to be on the same page. And ever since then, we found like it had just been heaven.
If you don't have that relationship and that synergy, I want to stress this to the listeners. You can fuck up a guy's whole career.
Big time.
And the, and maybe we note this down for a second. And I don't want to, we've talked about it before on the podcast, and I think he's fine with us talking about it. Boone Myers.
Oh my gosh. That guy was that poor. Oh.
We'll come back to it.
Okay.
Man, there's this, maybe I'm getting into a topic that is
Cole Crosston.
Crosston, go down the list. There's several guys. You guys are working in the weight room all day. In our building, it was actually nice. They were literally right across the hall. The door looked into the other door of the training room. You have 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. It doesn't matter how smart they are. They could be fucking physical therapy majors themselves. It is very easy to confuse a guy with terminology, like you said, and plan of care and all the stuff that he has to now manage if he's hurt and he's injured and he has to, and he's worried about his school. He's worried about the football side of things. He's got, you know, a girlfriend, all these things that go into his life. And now if you have the strength coaches and the athletic trainers pulling on two different strings, telling him two different things, or maybe even trying to tell him the same stuff but using different words, man, things can start to get jumbled. I was so aware of this because the special, this is maybe a very weird abstract thing that specialists had a window into, because we had so much time during practice that I was observing you guys doing the rehab on the field during practice. And I was also observing when they would be taken by Russ and the staff. or what's his name? Now I can't think of his name. Doug. And so I was just very like, I got to watch a lot of rehab happen. I got to watch guys on the bike a lot. I got to watch guys pull sleds a lot. And there has to be, yeah, you're right. There has to be, and I don't know how you would describe your guys' relationship with the training staff. I felt like it was pretty good, but maybe there was room for improvement.
It was okay.
Okay. It was okay. There you go. I mean, not necessarily like you have to work to make that a optimized relationship, I feel like.
Just like anything, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like any relationship, yeah. My school at Towson, the kids called it Lima School. When they would train with me, if they were hurt, they called it Lima School because they never used to have to. They literally never rehabbed during practice if they were hurt. And then I got there and I was like, yeah, no, we're doing stuff. And they called it Lima U. And if somebody had like a long-term injury, they're like, oh, you getting that master's degree. If somebody like got hurt, they were like, oh, shoot, you getting that PhD.
And so, you know, the process of somebody gets hurt, they have to, I'd actually love to know how that works. So now you guys have a medical meeting every week, right? And
you have your regularly scheduled medical meeting, but then you also have your infrequent end of the day. You're meeting every day, but then you're also having that one big time one. Yeah. Yeah.
For example, let's use Cade's injury a couple weeks ago with the concussion,
which is mind blowing to me that he's not back yet, but that's,
I would imagine he has to be ready to go about right now as we record.
I guess this. Because you lose a day with Friday, it would be my only reason, or it's a really bad concussion. Would be like, yeah, that makes sense if you think about the fact that you lose a day in your protocol and it being Friday. So yeah, that makes more sense.
And they claimed he couldn't travel. Like it still was the plane ride was.
Then that means he's having symptoms, and yeah.
Yeah. And the plane ride would have been Thursday, so then it was
Yep.
Cade gets a concussion, he's ruled out during the game. What does step A, B, C look like from game time to return to play for a player like that? Or
Or you want any acute injury?
Concussion's a little bit different, I guess, because there's nothing you can really do to rehab a concussion, is there?
Yes and no, there is. So let's use concussion vanilla, quick version, and then other injuries.
Sure.
Vanilla, quick version. Let's say, you know, he gets a concussion. All right, you're going to monitor symptoms the next. And this is also the very vanilla version. You can get much better with if you're constantly evaluating players' brain health throughout the season, you wouldn't be doing this version. That'd be a different path. So again, we're going to stick with the vanilla version. The vanilla version, monitor symptoms the next day. If they have no symptoms for that 24 hours, then you would be able to start super duper easy light activity, which would be just get on a bike for 20 minutes. It's not a certain level of RPM. It's nothing. Just be on the bike at your own pace for 20 minutes. See if that causes any symptoms. 24 hours later, if you're clear, cool. Let's do aerobic activity. Let's actually put a heart rate monitor on you. Let's see if you can handle, you know, 130 to 150 heart rate for 40 or 20 minutes on the bike. Hey, no symptoms. Awesome. Now we're going to start to do some anaerobic activity, and we can do that on your feet. Let's get a heart rate monitor on you. Again, let's make sure that we're hitting the required, you know, work really hard for a couple seconds, rest, and do that over a period of time, 20, 25 minutes. Rest 24 hours. See if you have any symptoms. No symptoms, cool. Let's go into a now non-contact practice. You're not allowed to hit anybody, but now you're stressing that anaerobic system again over time, not hitting anybody. Cool. No symptoms. Awesome. Let's do a contact practice. Wait 24 hours after that. No symptoms. Cool. Now you're fully cleared. Okay. And what we used to do sometimes at Towson is during that. And the reason that I said losing a day, if you lose a day, like for us, we had Thursdays off at Towson. And because the players had to be off, I legitimately would wear helmet and shoulder pads to help give people a contact practice on Thursday so they could have a normal practice on Friday and be able to go. And we would.
Saying you personally would.
Me personally. So I would, that way I could run the rehab exactly how it needed to look. So like if I had an offensive lineman that was coming back from a concussion, I'll get in a three stance, three technique.
Yeah.
And I'll, like if I'm going to pass rush him, I'm going to lead with my helmet. I'm going to because I need to know. I need to know that
you got to give that contact.
Correct. So I'm hitting them, and like the athletic trainer's like, this is wild. I was like, this is part of the job. This is what I do. And to your point about like, there's nothing you can do to speed up a concussion. You can. And it's the float therapy, which we did at Towson, and you can pay for it out of the medical budget because there is tons of research on the benefits of sensory deprivation on brain health. So we used to do that, to speed the quote unquote, speed the process up. But,
I was going to say, maybe there is a little bit of like more new age stuff, like a float therapy or, I don't know, maybe even red light or something like that would help.
Start doing that with that. And again, like do it like, okay, cool. You know, let's say Cade got hit Saturday. Like I'd probably like, and he's feeling fine. Start floating him Tuesday, float him, like just let him. And again, maybe it's not even so he can play the game, but just so he can feel better as a human being.
Yeah. It's like a, if anything, it's just like a placebo. Like, hey, this might.
Any of our listeners out there, go float and you come out of that thing and you. Whew.
I've never floated before.
Bro,
it sounds awesome.
You got to. Start with start with 60 minutes. Most places don't do less than 60. Same places will offer 90. That'll be too long. If you've meditated, when I think you said you have, you'll be fine. Yeah. Any of our listeners out there, start with 60, float.
What was the app that we used at Iowa? We used to have
Headspace.
Headspace. I really tried. Like I think I was probably one of the
six.
Yeah, the 10%. I really do think I was like one of the 5 or 10% that like tried to get into like a decent like meditation routine. It was tough back then. It's really hard to get through like a college kid's age brain. Like, hey, you should meditate.
Correct.
It's tough to get.
I can get you to have 30 seconds just to breathe, which is why at the end of training in the off season, we would literally shut the lights off, tell the players to kick their feet up on benches. And like, we didn't do post stretch. No, we would do a post just breathing, get parasympathetic. Yeah. And so we'd shut the lights off in like 2-3 minutes, put on some like calming music.
We're on so many tangents here, but I have to say it anyway, and it's relevant. I took yoga in college. I actually took it maybe twice or three times because they let you, and you got like 2 or 3 credit hours out of it. Anyway, the best I ever felt physically was, and this was during spring ball, right? So long practices, spring ball's a lot of kicks. Kirk Ferentz will run that fucking period back if he wants to, because we missed a kick that he thought should have gone through. So, you know, we're working, we're conditioning, a lot of heavy lifting during that period. That's really what a specialist would feel. We did like I think it was called like Shavasana at the end of a.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You just lay there and
you lay there and she basically the instructor would walk you through it. You basically take a fucking nap.
Yeah.
But she's walking you through like breathing and thought process while you lay there and. Best we would do it like once every 5 weeks. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. But like
when I would come out of that, dude, the moped ride back to my house or over to the complex, my body would feel like I'm on a cloud right now. This is amazing. Like the de-stress of that, oh my God, it was amazing. And I do believe that there's probably like athletes probably haven't dipped into that enough as far as like your everyday average athlete hasn't dipped into the breathing techniques and de-stressing. Anyway, so that's how you would approach a concussion.
That's how you approach a concussion. Yep.
And the symptoms you were talking about, I wanted to hit on that. You're like, okay, well, what symptoms are you looking for? It's probably like dizziness, headache,
the medical staff will literally have an entire list for the athletes. So our listeners out there, there's a list of like all the things that are part of like in concussion protocol, but there's a sheet of like, hey, do you feel this when you're in this situation? Do you feel this in this situation?
Yeah.
And then that way the athlete can select yes or no. So then that way we know their symptoms and then we're able to track it over like, hey, look, you know, because worst case scenario, let's say somebody's like, oh, something bad happens. It's like, listen, you told us right here on this date at this time that you had no symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah. They try to come after the university. Like,
but it's like, no. Look, this was your words.
Yeah.
SNL skit. Those are your words.
Yeah. Non-concussion. Something like, let's say a guy
Jay just hurt his hamstring, no?
Yes. Yeah. Say guy pulls a hammy.
You immediately start with like, hey, how serious? Now, again, there's going to be the athletic trainers out there. And if you're listening to this, please don't be those athletic trainers that say, we're going to ice it and do nothing. Please don't stop. When you stop icing hamstrings, you get the best results. And we've had, like, I have the data to prove it from Towson. So don't ice them. Yeah, you're going to, like, they're going to be sore the next day. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you're going to evaluate them. How are they looking? And then you go from where the athletic trainer says, hey, you know, he's really sore. Let's start with worst case scenario, really bad. Okay, the next day that you have him, you're biking him or you're walking him and you're moving the athlete so that way you can get the hamstring moving. And you're probably just doing everything, like I said, either on a bike or it's all linear. You might, and we started to find this out with some research, doing some lateral sled walk for continued glute strengthening will help with the hamstring recovering during that process. So you're just doing super vanilla walking, biking, getting the, you know, having the athlete moving. Is what you're going to do. Then the next day from there, you would hopefully be able to progress. Okay, they handled that. Now let's start to do some marches. Let's start to do some dribbles. Let's do some skipping. Let's even do like a 1 or 2 step acceleration at a submaximal effort. Let's just get them doing things that make them feel like, hey, you know what? I'm starting to feel better.
Yeah.
And you tell the athlete on a pain scale, 0 is life. 10 is re-injury to it. We're never going above a 5. We'll deal with 5s because specific adaptation to imposed demands and progressive overload, but we need to do a little bit of something. And then you just stage it from there each day and communicate with the athletic trainer. Hey, AT, I need you to do more. Like, you don't need to be doing a bunch of eccentric hamstring leg curl. Like, you don't need to be doing the GHR. Like, yes, we'll test GHR strength on a Kanga Tech to know specifically, like, how their strength is. And sure, we could do an acceleration as they get closer to being exit criteria, but we don't need it. Like, this athlete has just been playing football for a very long time. It's an acute injury. I need you to get inflammation down, improve tissue quality. Let me stress them at practice. Let's then talk about it on the back end. And that's how you go.
So for those listening, you can hear there's like a 2-prong approach, right? And I mean, that might be a big way of simplifying it, but basically they're going to spend time with the AT, but then during practice, they're also going to spend time with the strength coaches on the side before their return to play. And like you said, the ATs are really focused on like the stuff that they can really do with the tools that they have in the athletic training room. You know, I'm thinking about some of the stuff like, that you guys would never touch, but it's more of an AT thing. Like, they're scraping, like inflammation kind of stuff. They're scraping, they're, you know, doing some mobility. I mean, even you guys would work into some mobility stuff, but it starts to get a little bit more dynamic with you guys. And then you guys are also sort of in charge of, hey, they're now potentially out for weeks at a time. You guys really have to manage the conditioning side of things. And making sure that they're still staying as close to game shape as possible, which is where the bike comes in, the sleds come in, stuff like that, where you're still working the muscles aerobically, anaerobically, where a lot of the AT stuff that's going on is like localized to maybe the joint specifically. You know, I think about the slant boards that they're using in there, some of the balance stuff that they're using in there, some more of like very classic physical therapy stuff. You guys have like this hybrid way of transitioning them back, and it's a lot more sport specific. Starts to get more sport specific. It feels like. Is that correct?
Yeah, and then what will happen really well is like, okay, once they're with us, and you'll start to see this phased approach, like, okay, hey, they're back into practice, but they can only do 25% of practice. You typically will then like, okay, go to the beginning part of practice, like individual and blah, 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 because you're not ready for the chaos that is 9-on-7
like team. Yeah.
Right. Like, you're not ready for that chaos, but you're ready to start doing drills so we can then stress you. And so that's where the strength coach will say, okay, now we have to recreate that chaos. Cool. You did 1-on-1s in Indy, you did maybe some 2-on-1s with your own group, but now over here with the strength coaches, we're going to hold bags and we're going to have to force you to block a 3 technique and climb to the linebacker. We're going to go 2-on-1 against you. Or if you're a wide receiver, you're going to have to stock block me, or we'll have you literally run the route tree. like whatever it is. And that was my job as the head strength coach, is like, okay, you're a linebacker. Cool. I'm going to then pretend I'm a fullback kicking you out. You have to handle that. You have to drop. And so as the strength coach, you need to know everything that happens for that individual athlete during individual, during games, whatever. So you can recreate it. That's where you have your GPS unit on as well. So now I've recreated practice based off of accelerations, decelerations, change in direction, right, left leg, total volume. I then take that data to the athletic trainer and say, hey, here's the drills that I did, sets, reps, intensities, rest periods, input this into their rehab folder, document, whatever it is that you're utilizing. Here's the GPS data that shows, you know, Jay Higgins as a linebacker. This is what his data was on the day. And then you start looking at ACEL, DCEL, change in direction, total volume, high speed running. Look, it now literally was more than what the guys did at practice. This is why you can safely allow him to return to practice tomorrow in a limited capacity, because it's not our thoughts anymore. It is data.
Yeah. And so to finalize it there, you guys use that data, you provide it to the AT. They're also kind of collecting some of their own data, and they have the final say on the return to practice.
Correct. Because they are speaking on behalf of the team physician. Like they're signing off underneath the name of whoever that person is. Yep. And that person is where the buck really stops. What we're doing is we're helping, you know, communicate like, hey, listen, you know, we're advocating to the AT to then advocate to the physician. Like, hey, this is why they can. And I had a perfect example of that. We had a kid tear his pec in after spring ball. Complete, like we were straight linear periodization, 75, 85, 90% each week. And in the 90% week, we were hitting doubles, and he, you know, tore his pec. Happened in April. And as we're getting closer, like we're showing, you know, proof of data, like, hey, this person's doing full body weight pushups. Let's start him on a bench press progression. The surgeon heard bench press and the AT, and like the AT was actually able to be like, listen, no, no, no. It's a four board bench press at 50%. So it's limited range of motion. And then we started to reduce the number of boards and increase the weight. Four board
bench press, like a...
Right. Like, so super limited range of motion, but now we're just getting the athlete back on the bench and thinking about doing it.
Yeah. You're almost just putting them in the mental state more
than it.
Yeah.
You got to get back on the horse. And so, but I say this because if I didn't have that great relationship with the AT, who that AT had a better relationship with the surgeon, and now the surgeon's like, oh, you're right. Like, so you have to be willing to push back, but it's not what you say. It's also how you say it. It's the context in which you say it, and working in that true collaborative environment, because at the end of the day, it's about the athlete. So that's how you do it. That's how you integrate it practice. And it, sometimes it really does get messy where it's like, okay, hey, you know, Higgins, he can do periods 1 through 5. He needs to come out during punt because they're doing full kickoff. He's out for the next 2 periods. Then he can go back in. They can come back out. If you're a really savvy, good strength coach during that punt period, you're talking with the kid, hey, what do you usually do on punt? All right, where do you do this? Cool. Let's find a regressed version of it that still fits within the scheme of what you're allowed to do. Now that athlete has context, like really, really smart. And if you're a really, really sharp strength coach, what you're doing is you're doing all that rehab right near punt. So guess what the kid gets to hear? He gets to hear the special teams coach giving the cues and talking to the kids of doing the things that he's supposed to be doing. So he's learning right there.
You could almost run some of his reps off the cadence, like off the field.
Correct. That's exactly what you do. And you say, hey, listen, you're usually a personal protector. Word during this, you hear the cadence. I'm going to come in and I'm going to hit you, but it's at a submaximal speed. So you're still getting used to it. Like, and that's how you want to run a rehab, because remember, you're looking at average time to return. So yes, some of our listeners could be like, well, you know, you guys could just lie and speed it up. So say that sure, if we do, guess what's going to happen? Re-injury. And now with the re-injury, that time to return is going to take even longer. So you can't speed it up.
No,
you
and
you have to do it the right way.
I don't think there's incentive really for, unless you're a really shitty strength coach or AT and you're like, I just don't want more work to do today. Yeah, he's good to go, which would just be like the worst malpractice ever. Then you're more often than not, you're making sure that they have enough time to get back. I love that final sort of step of pulling that they're still involved. They're doing some of practice, but in some of those team situations where the whole operation's going on, you pull out their 1/11th of what is happening on the field and you still have them do it, but sans the chaos around them. I really like that. as a, like a final step. That's cool. But it doesn't always go well. It doesn't always, you know, there's injuries are sometimes unpredictable. They don't get better sometimes. We talked about Boone Myers earlier.
This might be the tagline for the like, it's not, there's no such thing as injury prevention. And there's a problem in this field. It's not, it's injury risk reduction. Because, and I was talking about it this morning with Moses Cabrera, who's a friend of mine who won three Super Bowls with the Patriots. It is not, we are injury, we are reducing the risk of it. There's still the chance. We're going to do our best, but that is it. We can never, nobody, if any person says they can reduce injuries, they're lying to you. You can reduce the risk and you can help them become more robust, but you play a violent sport. Buddy Morris talked about it on the Cheeky Midweeky before, where, you know, working with JJ Watt and stuff, and this, the violentness of the game.
I was just going to say, when you are, when you have really competitive people who are pushing physical ability to the limits to find optimal performance or their best performance, and whatever it is, it could be weightlifting, basketball, football, I mean, whatever sport, fucking pickleball. But you're inherently like, it's the literally in the name of what you're doing. Like, you are pushing the limits. And when you push the limits, like, you are assuming a risk, and you are, there's going to be injury. There just is. So I like that. I like that. And I probably will use that as a tagline. There is no such thing as injury prevention.
There's just not. And like, the problem is people like that Jordan Love guy, and they're personal terrorists, not personal trainers.
Set the context here. Justin texted me last week. It was like a video of Jordan Love, who's dealt with a lot of injury this season. He's been on and off the field. I think, who's the backup? Like Malik Willis has come in. They actually won the Packers some games this year. But Love is like this, you know, he's the post-Rodgers era guy. He's like, hey, he's going to be our promised land guy. He hasn't been able to stay on the field. And he posts this video with his, I guess, his private trainer, of like him in like what looks like a basement with some like equipment that you got from a YMCA that sold off like equipment when they bought new. And he's like, you know, the athletic trainer's like post is like, just putting in that work with my guy, Jordan Love. Really? You're putting in that work, huh? What are you doing?
So that's the problem, is people like that. So, and to set the scene more, like, remember, and I didn't remember any of this. So I had to have, like, again, that same guy Moses was talking with me about it. He goes, remember, Jordan was in a contract dispute. So he probably wasn't in the facility. That means he's not in the facility. He's not training with the team.
Yeah.
So he's being undertrained by this guy. So to your point before about, like, you know, when, if strength coaches do things like, oh, you're really good, I can't hurt you. Well, guess what's going to happen? When you go and play the sport, the other team's going to try to hurt you. Now you're not robust to the training.
Yeah.
Now, I can't prove that Jordan Love's getting hurt because he trained with that guy. But what I can say is that guy that is his personal rehab specialist does not work for the Green Bay Packers and is doing these things that
likely has no contact with anybody in the organization.
No. And it's like, you're just going to now badmouth, like, in his conversation with somebody else, he's like, well, I mean, there's, you know, 70 players on the Packers. They can't really individualize. Dude, you are nothing but a liar. That is the face of the organization. We worked with 120 players, and when they're like, as I'm talking to you about things, we can still individualize rehab when there's it's the face of the organization. There's only 70 players in the NFL. Like, that guy was just a personal terrorist, not a personal trainer. And it's just so sad to see. And I know some people on the inside on the strength staff at the Packers, and they're like, dude, ever since he signed that contract, like, all these people out of the woodworks have been like essentially coming and trying to like mooch off of him.
And my response to Justin when we were talking about this was, we should just do that. We should just go find rich NFL guys and screw this podcasting thing. Let's just go get like six guys who are rich, and we'll just sell to them that we can keep them safe and their hamstrings will be good with us.
Except they actually would get good quality training with us.
Yeah, with us, it would be great.
Like, we would actually train them the right way. But like, that's why. So I had,
I'd have them do CrossFit all the time.
A little dabble of it in there at the end during the GPP phase. Why not?
GPP CrossFit is good.
But like Justin Lovett, the current head strength coach for the Rams. I don't know if they won last night or not, but he won a Super Bowl with them and he came from Purdue. And when I had him on the show, he's like, listen, he goes, you have to ask yourself. He's like, why do you think they hired me? He's like, a guy that from college going pro. He's like, why do they hire me? He's like, they wanted somebody that would have the players actually lift weight. He's like, you know, we clang and bang, quote unquote, in college. In pros, to your point, sometimes they don't. He goes, when I'm working with Aaron Darnold and Aaron's like, I want more. He's like, I have to give him more, but I have to balance the line of if I give you more and you get hurt, my fault. If I don't give you enough and you don't feel prepared, also my fault. So how do I play into who you are, Aaron Darnold, of doing more and squatting and all the things that make you feel like you're Aaron? There is a risk. How do I ride that line? And there's a reason that guys like him or guys like Moses have won Super Bowls.
Is it fair to say that in the NFL, you're still touching that high end of training and performance, but maybe not consistently breaking down the body like you would in college, guys? Like you're still, because you still, like you said, you do still have to maintain that. Like you have like peak speed. Like peak speed has got to be so important in the NFL. When we went down to train with Kittle, actually a couple days before tight end, most of his stuff was all focused on like peak speed, explosive stuff. Which makes sense. And it actually is crazy with these athletes how little it takes as far as like hypertrophy and strength wise to maintain where they're at. It's actually mind blowing how little training you need to maintain. Hard to progress, but once you have it, it's actually fairly easy to maintain. That goes for like your average dude in the gym that's just trying to like maintain his 315 bench or whatever. You do still have to touch it. And mostly just because the speed of which the actual games happen.
Yeah. Oh, it's so fast.
It would be frightening to actually go into one of those games and not have touched like max velocity running or like a real couple heavy reps of like explosive power in the weight room. Like it would be dangerous. It is dangerous. It's dangerous regardless. Like the speed of the NFL is insane. So as you guys can tell listening to this, it's nuanced and there's a lot of detail in how to bring a guy back. And when there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of ways that you can mess that up and it gets messed up plenty of times. Thought it was a relevant topic for today, just as we're down to like our 18th quarterback. Lachey is dinged up. We've got some receivers dinged up. Higgins got dinged up. Like it's that time of the season where the injury attrition is a severe factor in your overall team's ability to continue to find consistency on the football field. And obviously Iowa has struggled with that all season. Nonetheless, it's a bye week. Get the boys healthy and prepare for Brian Ferentz in Maryland.
Fill that cup. I mean, you're selling the same thing that happened in 13. Win the last two games, like it was Michigan, Nebraska then.
Yeah.
Hey, win these last two games. Let's go 8-4. It's as good as you can be. Rest up. Let's go get it.
Find yourself into a bowl game, win one there, and then take some learning lessons into the next season.
Amen.
Which we fucked up in the 14 season. But hey, at least you could talk about it.
That springboarded 15.
It made 15 better. You're right. 5-10-5 show with Coach Lima. We'll be back every week this season, like always. Thanks for listening. No game tomorrow. Enjoy no stress. You can just watch other college. You can just watch other college just football. Watch football. Yeah, just watch football, man. Just enjoy college football. There's, the playoff is making things interesting this year. There's like barely any teams left that are undefeated. It's a good year of college football. We'll talk to you next week. See you. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.